Julie Edge, Onchan MHK, seeking re-election. How have the past 5 years shaped you?
So obviously I was a civil servant prior to being elected. I went in with a view of how government was being run. And obviously from a learning curve point of view, certainly on government procedure policy and what was in place and legislation, you know, I felt like I was way ahead of the curve from many of the colleagues that were recently elected.
So that's coming straight into the job?
Coming straight into the job. What I was not familiar with was the parliamentary procedure within the chambers. And, you know, I have learnt an awful lot with regards to standing orders in that 5 years. And I think that gives me much, you know, my experience going forward to elections in September. I feel that I've gained that knowledge now, and certainly I could, you know, I'll certainly hit the ground running more so. However, I felt that I did have that advantage last time.
You say parliamentary procedure there on the floor of Keys. Has your idea of what makes an effective MHK changed over that time? Is it asking questions, or is it more behind the scenes work?
Yeah, I have to do both, to be perfectly honest. I think when you're struggling to get answers, you have to ask questions. If a constituent comes to you and asks you to ask questions for them with their concerns, if you can't answer it and you can't get the information, of course, that's the whole point of democracy. You have to ask those questions. And many times when I've put a question forward, the ministers or the departments have answered it prior to it actually being read on the floor. So I think that shows the value and the importance of asking questions and challenging government.
Your name is quite a common sight on a question paper when the time comes around. How do you take those questions on behind the scenes? How do you convince the prospective voters that you do take those answers on to account, and you're not just doing it for, say, the press?
Obviously, I started with a theme, certainly with civil service. I was challenging on the civil service, the numbers, the cost of the civil service, and then I anything that I'm built up to. So my questions generally build either from oral to written or written to oral, and then if there's something worthwhile in it, I will move a motion, and you know, I have moved significant motions to seek change. Certainly on the civil service, the first one was a structural review of the civil service, which got voted through, I think, on the second time. I did change it slightly. I've picked that report up again now for June, and there's another motion on the June order paper because I have concerns with regards to the report.
You mentioned you were a civil servant previously. How do you regard that whole system now?
What I've seen over a number of years, and I've observed and watched, was what I would call grade creep and bloat in the system. So that's basically that grades keep going up and up, costing the public more, but services decreasing. And I've seen bloat up in the management areas. So I did move for a structural review. A report was completed. It's not a very good report, so I'm challenging that again this month because I do think we need to cut our cloth and we need to look at how we're going forward, make sure we've got the right calibre of officers in the right roles, and that is what a structural review is. Certainly that's not what I felt was delivered in the report.
As far as civil servants are concerned, do you think the public might be quite surprised by their influence on government?
Yeah, and you know, it's sometimes I actually feel sorry for the good officers, because there are some very, very good officers and very good calibre.
Have you experienced bad officers in your time?
Yes, certainly. We all have. When I first moved this motion, a lot of my colleagues were unsure about supporting it. They're now of a different view. They've experienced over the 4.5 years. We need to make sure we've got the right people, right calibre in the roles. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it's the ministers that are telling the officers what to do. I always listen to the professional view, but I challenge where I think it's appropriate. And I think that should be the way forward. We've got a large public sector, civil service is part of it, but the civil service really is the main sort of policy area and legislation area. So we need to make sure that's right and fit for purpose.
So how do you, I suppose, sort the wheat from the chaff?
Well, certainly, you know, that needs to be challenged. You know, I hear a lot of ministers say, no, that's operational. But it's the operational that's costing the people of the Isle of Man. So
when does the challenge become effective, though?
Well, I think it can become effective. We've seen changes in this administration with CEOs and officers going. I think we need to make sure that people are using the policies that are in place rather than avoiding them and trying to manage people out. I moved for whistleblowing. I had the whistleblowing committee created, and we've reported on that for significant change. And I do believe that whistleblowers will be the catalyst for change for Isle of Man government going forward.
Do you think there's much information that needs to come out from within government that requires a whistleblower?
Certainly, the whistleblowers that have been in fear of speaking up.
Well, who's putting that fear on them?
Well, exactly. That's the structure that's in place. And obviously, they've come forward. And to me, they're the most committed employees you'd want to employ. I would employ them over and above rather than manage them out of the system, with non-disclosure agreements. I'm totally, I'm not for that. To me, a whistleblower has a right to a voice, and I think it's a supportive mechanism for government going forward.
Okay, what's been your biggest challenge, do you think, over the past 5 years?
So the biggest challenge for me, obviously, was I was given the role as chair of Isle of Man Post Office. It's been a very exciting challenge, to be perfectly honest. The job I was given everybody said it's the poison chalice. But when I'm given something to do, I will actually do my best and make the changes. I was given the job, go in and sort it out. And I do believe, and the public can see that I have taken on that challenge. Yes, there's been strikes. However, the significant change that was required with pensions and terms and conditions I've successfully seen through, and we're now back into a profitable position, which, is something to be proud of in that space of time. So I can take on a challenge and I can deliver change.
Do you think you could have done that any differently to avoid, like you say, strikes?
You always look back at something, but I don't believe so. We had strategies that were approved by Timwald. We had a retail strategy. We had the post office strategy, and that was approved by Timwald. So Timwald had voted for that strategy. So, and that strategy was to deliver this change. So it was all within the strategy. So if you get approval and you get agreement from Timwald, you have to deliver that, in my view. I know there's many things that don't get delivered, but in my view, if I'm given that job, I will deliver it.
Say if Tinwald's happy, do you think the people on the street necessarily will be happy with the direction the post office is going now?
Well, you're talking about the retail strategy side, which again was approved by Tinwald for the post office to make sure that there was a services within a three-mile radius. We're delivering on that strategy. But I think the big issue, a lot of the public don't appreciate that these are privately run businesses. So although they're working as agents for Isle of Man Post Office, we are, we have to accept that if they hand in their resignation or they wish to retire, that we consider that. But we have to consider the individual. So if they want to retire from their business, we then have to focus and look at how we're going to take the retail strategy forward.
One issue which is going to be all over the candidates' manifestos this time around is housing. Obviously, we've seen house prices rising over the past year significantly. Where do you stand on housing?
Okay, obviously, I was responsible for housing when I had my role in DOI. And yes, we do need to invest in housing. But I think there's a misunderstanding with regards to housing as to the actual need. There has been need studies carried out. I delivered the Claphane housing estate during my tenure, and that was within budget. I also delivered a mid-rent pilot scheme, and that was brought in to support and help younger people save for the deposit to then move on to the first-time buyers schemes. There's a lot of myth around the first-time buyers schemes. There's two schemes. There's one that is for the new builds, but there's also a scheme that you can buy older properties and then do them up.
Do you still think there's work to be done on those schemes?
There's always room for improvement. Obviously, there's a scheme coming forward at Jerby. One of my election pledges was that I'd like to see schemes with serviced plots so people can buy a serviced plot and then they design their property and they build it. That's coming forward on the Jerby scheme. That's in for planning at the present time. So, I have delivered a lot on housing. people talk about social housing, that we don't have enough of them. We actually have, I think it's 6,500 properties. What we have is they're the wrong size and they don't fit the number of occupants. So we are short, certainly, of one bed and two bed units. But I'm sure there's other ways of improving that situation without saying we need millions of pounds spent.
If you had your time again last year, would you have stayed with the DOI?
Certainly. It came as a shock to me when the minister had given my job away to an MLC because it's a high policy area. I was the only division in DOI that was delivering projects and within budget. It was the only division that was working within budget. I'd delivered all of my commitments within the programme for government. So it was quite alarming, really. You get a new minister and then he wants to bring an MLC into a high policy area. I appreciate it. It's not the MLC's issue, but it was certainly a strange move by the minister to do that.
If you felt you could have proved yourself, why walk away?
At the end of the day, when you have a couple of hour discussions with the minister, I'd actually delivered everything I've spoke about today was delivered prior to me resigning. The only thing that hasn't been delivered is the housing strategy. Now, that was on its way, but then a motion came to Tim Ward and changed that significantly. You know, a lot of people think we should have housing associations. I'm not sure that's the right way forward for the people of the Isle of Man to make sure they've got affordable housing.
We'll take a bit of a retrospective look now again, standing as an independent this time around. Going back to 2016, why after being voted in as a Liberal Van-In candidate, with the endorsement of the very popular at the time, the outgoing Peter Caron, did you quit the party?
Okay, the reason I actually stood as a Lib Van candidate, I was considering standing, and I do have many similar views to Liberal Van-In. Peter Caron was finishing in his career and he came to my home at, it was 9 o'clock at night, and said, you know, will you consider it? He said, understand if you don't and I'll still support you whether you're independent or not. So I felt that was a full endorsement, really, no matter which way I went. Obviously, once you're in a party, you understand it differently. I hadn't really, I hadn't worked with either Kate Beecroft or Laurie Hooper. And I knew Peter Caron's style because clearly he was the constituency MHK for Onchan. I feel I have many of it. I still hold their values. I think I work like Peter. I challenge and I want to deliver successful change for people. However, once I was in the party, there was times where it was difficult, and I always felt that Liberal Van-In candidates would never ever necessarily become ministers going forward, and clearly the leader of the party become a minister, and I was advised that I shouldn't be asking oral questions on the floor of the House of Keys or Tim Ward. That's not what I got elected for. The people of Onchan voted me in to make sure that I would stand up for them, and it was a democracy that I could ask questions. So it became quite difficult. No, that was just the final straw, really. So you know, independent, and I feel I've carried on many of my pledges. It was my manifesto. It had Liberal Van-In policy in the back.
That carries quite a lot of weight, doesn't it? Having the Lib Van policies there mentioned at the back. Do you think? It might seem to some that you used that endorsement to get in. What do you say to them?
No, I certainly didn't use that endorsement. As I say, it was Peter that came to me, lastminute.com. I think, actually, people probably didn't expect me to get elected first time. I'd come out.
Did you expect to be elected first time?
No, it was a surprise. But actually, when I went out on the doorsteps, and Peter helped me on a couple of occasions, but I've been brought up in Onchan. The people of Onchan know me. They just didn't know my married name. So as soon as I was knocking on the doors, the people said, oh, Julie, why didn't you put your maiden name? So I think actually people know me. They know I'm hardworking and they know they can trust me. And I think they did vote for me because I was Julie Edge, not necessarily I was Julie Edge Liberal Van-In.
You mentioned the word trust there. Do you think you're going to have to put in the work this time around to prove you have integrity?
I think I've actually I'm doing that all the time. It's constant. You have to be, you know, you have to prove your integrity. I've pushed, certainly. I've been very vocal on COVID. I was one of the first to actually change secondary legislation during COVID. I was the first. Nobody else thought they could do that. So I've done that. I've challenged government on the genomics. I challenged on the education bill. I think what I've delivered is what people will see. That's where my integrity's come from. It's not come from a ticket with a different label. So my integrity is how hard I've worked and have I delivered on my manifesto pledges. And yes, I have significantly.
Now, you mentioned Onchan there. That's the constituency. You'll be walking around knocking on the doorsteps of people in Onchan. What do you think the major issue will be this time around?
Well, obviously, in Onchan, we've had issues with roads, we've had issues with behaviour of the youngsters. I've always said I want to put Onchan back on the map. I feel that we can't, at times, we can just be a village that people pass through. I don't want that. I want Onchan back on the map for what Onchan is. It's a fantastic place to live. I want to see the roads infrastructure maintained. It's quite a narrow village. I want to actually, I would love to see Onchan Stadium. It's 70 years anniversary this year. I want to see Onchan Stadium, you know, possibly become a national stadium and come a centre for cycling particularly, but also other venues. So, and also with regards to the behaviour, I'm in the village, I see what's happening. There's not big groups of children going around. It's certainly much better at the present time, but I've held a public meeting. I'm holding another public meeting next week, so the public can come forward with their concerns to the police and the commissioners and the local MHKs.
You've held public meetings before on this. How many months ago now?
It was last October.
Last October. Mm. So what have you achieved between then and now to tackle antisocial behaviour?
Okay, so obviously it's not me. It's not just the MHKs. You have to work collaboratively with the police and the commissioners and certainly with education. I've invited education along this time. And there's been big improvements. The commissioners have put a lot of work in for additional CCTV. Certainly there's a police base being created that's going to be launched soon. That's going to be in the commissioners' offices. So the commissioners have worked to make those improvements. And the police have put in targeted good work. It's certainly quiet, but we are coming up to the school holidays. We're towards the end of the TT break, and I thought that was the right time. I did promise the people at the public meeting that we would have another meeting, and I think it's the right time to have that. And we can also listen to any new concerns.
Some have mentioned that perhaps they believe those going around in these groups of youths, as it's been said, don't actually come from Onchan themselves. Where do you think they're coming from?
Well, Lewis, I've been brought up in Onchan and it's never been any different. There's always been concerns, oh, that youths are coming in from Paul Rose, youths are coming in from Peel. I've been brought up with that.
But it's why to Onchan?
I think it's just that they possibly go all around the island. I don't believe there's a major issue in Onchan. I think it's low level and it can be addressed.
But those around the island might disagree.
Yeah, and you know, I think the problem that we have got in Onchan is lack of facilities for the young. When I was younger, there was far more facilities available and a lot more in Douglas. There's just lack of facilities, and that's what we need to focus on, is giving them options. It's not just about sport. There's options that are needed for entertainment as well for the youths.
Okay, we're running close on time now. So just finally, why should people vote for you in September?
Okay, obviously I've done one term and I have stuck to my pledges with the people of Onchan. I hope that you can put your trust in me. I will go for greater transparency. And one of the things which I do feel needs to happen is a pause of the capital project schemes and complete the ones that are currently and on their way. But I do think that significant spend needs to be looked at. Projects need to be looked at. I want greater transparency, better value for money for the people of the island. We need to stop spending more than we're receiving in as income. And we need to look at delivering economic strategies that help support the island, attract families in, you know, between the ages of 30 and 50. And also, I think we need to really, really consider our health services and our elderly person's care, as in nursing care. We need to be doing this for the people to make the island that place that everybody wants to be.